This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
Another world, another time, in the age of wonder.
There was once a dream. You could only whisper it. Anything more than a whisper, and it would vanish.
A battle between good and evil.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Where shall I find a new adversary so close to my own level?
Try the local sewer.
You know of the rebellion against the Empire?
The Avengers, Earth's mightiest heroes.
Peace means having a bigger stick than the other guy.
One of these days, I'm gonna have a stick of my own.
I'm Groot.
Welcome to the Neverland Podcast. The podcast for lovers of Disney, Pixar, Marvel, and Star Wars.
I'm glad you're here to tell us these things.
Please welcome your host, Jeremy.
I thought he'd be taller.
Yeah, I can fly.
All it takes is faith. Rust.
Well, if it isn't the Star-Spangled Man with a plan, what is your plan today?
Up to Neverland!
Take your pixie out of your pockets, Neverlanders. Sprinkle some of that pixie dust around. Think up that happiest thought so you can fly away with me to Neverland. I, of course, am your head Lost Boy, Jeremy. You can call me the Spider Pan because every Lost Boy has to have a nickname. And I'm here with Lost Boy Kryptonian, known as the Phil. And Seth, we don't have a Lost Boy nickname for you, but we just call him Sethro, so he can be Lost Boy Sethro.
Lost Boy Sethro, how you doing?
Spectacular.
You gotta speak up louder than that.
Very spectacular.
Yeah, we gotta make sure everybody can hear you, all the folks at home. So yeah, we have three of us here, which is kind of different and fun. You know, I always thought it would be kind of an interesting podcast with the three of us. We're knuckleheads anyway. If you could just sit into some of our weird conversations, I'm sure it'd make a good show. But we're here, of course, because I've got two things here coming up for you this week. Which I gotta, first, I guess I better say, yes, the website is down. Yes, I'm aware of it. It's the same problem I had before. I'm trying to get it fixed. But eventually, NeverlandPodcast.com will be back. I just don't know when that's going to happen. But the website, yes, is down, and I'm working on it. But we've got lots of fun things coming up on the show, because Toy Story 4 came out this weekend, so we're going to talk about that film, some of its production, and of course what we thought of the film. And then I have a very special guest, Gary Woods, which you would not know his name from the readout, but there was this, and it's not really a fan film, it's a feature-length movie that he filmed independently called Saving Star Wars. It's basically what happens when two guys accidentally kidnap George Lucas. It's hilarious. I've seen it. He's actually working on another documentary. It's probably going to take us a couple of weeks to get through everything because he just loved to be able to tell these stories. He has a lot of fun stories about filming it, about getting a copy of his film into George Lucas's hands. And maybe it was his influence that George Lucas made sure that we now have 7, 8, and 9 coming. Because it could have been their influence, and I'll let him tell that story later. So we've got lots of fun coming up today. Not a whole lot of news that I really want to get into, but there's a couple things I got to bring up.
Spanning the Disney and geek universe to bring you the best in comics, toys, movies, and entertainment. This is news from around Neverland.
Now, did y'all see this happen? So, on Twitter, Marvel puts out an image. And it's a four, has a spider web, has a little spider in it.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I saw that.
You saw this. Now, when this happened, everybody freaked out. Now, see, I've been doing this now. I'm on my sixth season. I know when some sort of news comes, wait until you have something official before you go ahead. Because you'll make a fool of yourself. There were YouTube channels claiming they knew exactly what it was. And they came out instantly with saying, oh, they're going to adapt Sam Raimi's script to Spider-Man 4, and they're going to make a comic book of it. And people were sure of it.
No, it's the Fantastic Four where Spider-Man was a part of it.
and that was the thing, because I figured it would be, because Marvel put it out, not Marvel Studios. So I thought, it's probably something in the comic books, and I don't know, maybe they're going to do something with the Fantastic Four, because Dan Slott, who wrote Spider-Man for about 10 years, is now working Fantastic Four. So that would be interesting. Maybe they're going to do a crossover. Could be something like that. But I wasn't going to say that or renounce it online. I did not post anything. I said, let me just sit back and wait, because Marvel will say something more. But everybody on Sunday freaked out. Four! It's Spider-Man 4 and some fashion. And they got my buddy DJ Man Cub. He was getting excited because I think he liked the idea of a comic adaptation. He sent me some videos. It's like, it would have been cool. And I think they got his hopes up. But then Monday comes out, and out on Twitter, Marvel pumps out a Spider-Web 3. Silence. Everybody's like, it's a countdown. So now, the funny thing is, we had this huge buildup. I was expecting a huge announcement because they're counting down every day until Thursday. And what they finally announced, J.J. Abrams and his son, I think his son's name is Henry, are writing a Spider-Man miniseries that's coming out later this year. Oh, okay. I was expecting something big. But this is cool.
Yeah, this is neat.
It's very neat, but I don't know. The building it up with the countdown, I expected something even bigger.
Like a movie or something.
Not from Marvel directly. No, this is the comic company.
Yeah.
The comic outfit. So I knew it was going to be something, but I was like, oh, well, okay. Cool. I'm going to buy it. It sounds interesting, but I don't know. Somehow I thought when you're counting down, you want the explosion after one. This didn't feel like an explosion. It felt like, oh, hey, that's kind of cool. All right. I like that. But I expected something that was going to knock my socks off. It didn't knock my socks off, but I'm kind of excited. I like the idea. It's going to be cool. I like J.J. Abrams, so I'm like, cool. But I don't know, I expected more of a bombshell than that.
What was he going to say? Well, you know, Sarah had said something about that too. And she said, you know, some people were going so far as to think that it was going to be a live action movie announcement of the Into the Spider-Verse. Like, you're going to get, you know.
Like they were going to cross every Spider-Man from film ever and somehow or another. I saw some pictures people drew on that of like, oh, they're going to bring Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire, and they're going to be in a movie with Tom Holland.
I mean, who doesn't want to hear Uncle Ben? that was the epic.
Yeah, I want to see that.
Yeah. And it would have been kind of neat in the Spider-Verse concept with what they've got with the Miles Morales movie, which I know Philip loved. He got so excited we were watching that.
Oh, I bought it the other day. That's a great
one. It's a great one.
I was reading stuff in the middle of the night where they were talking about all these comic book movies that are going to be made. Turns out that I don't know, 75% of them are just rumors.
Right.
And
I never report a rumor.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that a lot of them wouldn't be fun. They would be fun. But most of them, as we just said, are rumors.
Right. But it would be nice because they got a multiverse going in some animation to maybe do an animated version of Tom Holland, an animated version of Tobey Maguire, and an animated version of Andrew Garfield, and have them all together. That would have been a fun idea. That might have been a big bomb announcement, and maybe J.J. Abrams was going to direct it.
That would be fun.
That would have been cool. But not that this isn't cool. I am thinking this is cool, but I think I expected bigger. Well, when you do a countdown, you have to have an explosion.
We're all denied of seeing Tobey Maguire's constipated looking face again. Every time
he did make a pretty good Peter Parker, though.
It's me not either. Final countdown.
Car-ride infringement! No, not really, because I'm not playing it. The other big announcement that actually came out that I got to bring up was Toys R Us is coming back by Christmas.
Yay!
Another company owns it. They've taken care of all their debt problems, but there's only going to be 10 stores.
Oh.
They're only going to be about 10,000 square feet, so they're not big stores. But they're going to have an online store, and that's where everything's going. That's pretty much what drove Toys R Us out of business is Amazon. All the online stores, they're killing regular walk-in retail stores.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because I don't mind shopping online, but I want to walk into a store and look at it and get hands-on. And I do have digital movies, but nearly every digital movie I have a hard copy of.
Yeah.
Because if Vudu goes out of business or something, I still have my movie, right? Well, you're all what?
Nothing.
Because, you know, I know you're all the same with me, because we're all, you know, you're older than I am, and I'm an old fogey.
Oh, hey. by a year. Not even a year.
Seth has got me by a year.
Yes, but I don't.
You got me by a few months.
There'll be spectacle, there'll be fantasy, there'll be daring do and stuff like you would never see.
Be a movie.
Yeah, we're gonna be a movie.
Starring everybody
and me.
Boy, I wish I were you people seeing this for the first time.
Kermit, I got a great picture of the chicken.
Oh, good.
Real quick thing, though, while we get into Toy Story 4.
Yes.
Want to bring in some stuff, you know, here's from the official press release. This featured, of course, Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, Annie Potts, Tony Hale. I love Tony Hale.
Yeah.
Keegan-Michael Key, which they should put his partner in there. Jordan Peele. Keegan Peele in a role that fit them.
Oh, they're funny.
Madeline McGraw, Christina Hendricks as Gabby, I guess it was, really. Wasn't
who was that? Who did the
Christina Hendricks. I think she was in, like, Ad Men or Mad Men or whatever. I don't know. I haven't paid a lot of attention to her. I haven't seen a lot of stuff with her. Keanu Reeves, Ally Mackie, Jay Hernandez, Lori Allen, Joan Cusack, Bonnie Hunt, back again, Kristen Schaal, Emily Davis, Wallace Shawn, John Ratzenberger, Blake Clark, June Squibb, Carl Weathers, Lila Sage, Don Rickles, Jeff Garland, Malia Bargis-Good, Jack McGraw, Juliana Hanson, Estelle Harris, Josh Cooley. When Josh Cooley was the director. This is his first feature. But now here's the thing I find very, very interesting in this press release. I saw this later on IMDb. Because I recognized one of them. Mel Brooks is in this. Carol Burnett is in this. And I forgot who the third guy was. Some other. Let me get an IMDb real quick. But they all have cameos as characters in a closet, which I don't want to spoil anything, so I can't really say much. But I saw this just before. But they have cameos, but I don't know if maybe they just didn't want to credit it until later. But I find it also funny, the names of their characters in the film... There we go. So here, Alan Oppenheimer was Old Timer, the clock. Alan Oppenheimer. Okay, Seth is getting... I was like, do you know who that was? Skeletor and about everything
awesome.
Else.
Awesome.
Skeletor was Old Timer. Carol Burnett was Carol, with a weird spelling, Burnett. She was like... I can't remember what sort of toy she was in the closet. Betty White was like Bitey White. Carl Reiner was Carl Rhinoceros.
Awesome.
And then, of course, Mel Brooks was Meliphant Brooks. He's the only voice I really recognized straight away in the closet there. But it was nice to have these little cameos in there.
Yeah, that's neat. That's really cool.
I thought it was a fun detail. But the synopsis here is, Woody, voice of Tom Hanks, has always been confident about his place in the world and that his priority is taking care of his kid, whether that's Andy or Bonnie. So when Bonnie's beloved new craft project turned toy, Forky, voice of Tony Hale, stole the movie for a little bit, declares himself as trash and not a toy, Woody takes it upon himself to show Forky why he should embrace being a toy. But when Bonnie takes the whole gang on her family's road trip excursion, Woody ends up on an unexpected detour that includes a reunion with his long-lost friend Bo Peep, voice of Annie Potts, after years of being on her own. Bo's adventurous spirit and life on the road belie her delicate porcelain exterior. As Woody and Bo realize they're worlds apart when it comes to life as a toy, they soon come to find out that's the least of their worries. And that is my impersonation of, I cannot think of his name now, but he lives nearby, but he does a lot of voiceover stuff like that.
Is that his name?
No. And I've met him, and now I can't think of his name. He was Professor Plutonium in the Powerpuff Girls. He's Yoda in the Clone Wars and then in the Rebels. But when you hear his voice, he does that great style like that, which is what I was kind of doing there. And now I can't think of his... Wow. Everybody's yelling at their iPods and phones right now because I'm an idiot.
See, this is what you get for talking about getting older. You know,
I'm forgetting stuff. And he's a cool guy, and he's done so much stuff, but he has this thing, when, like on Clone Wars, he would announce the beginning of story, and he has this great way that he does it, and I was trying to...
It's okay. You did the best you could.
Yeah, I probably could have done better, but so that is the official synopsis of the film. Now, I do have some, of course, fun facts that I dug up from the press release before we get into the actual review, and we'll tell you what we thought about it. But all right, so let's talk a little bit about the production. And I will alternate with you because you're close enough to be able to read screen. So I'll read the odd numbers, you read the even numbers. Good?
We will try our best.
All right. So first story. The storyboard was drawn by story artist Afton Corbin for the sequence called Recruit Duke. Storyboards are drawn by story artists in order to pre-visualize the film as the script is being written. They are placed side by side in sequence by the editorial team to convey the pace of scenes and deliver a rough sense of how the story unfolds. The storyboard is one of, I gotta get my mouse to work, approximately 1,530 boards delivered to editorial for this particular sequence. In total, 145,389 storyboards were delivered for the entire film.
Art. Once the storyline for a sequence is determined, concept art is created by the production designer and art
department.
That's what I said.
Art department.
To determine the look and feel of the film. This concept art piece was created by artist John Lee and showcases the exploration of color and design for the characters and new environments. In this sequence, Woody and Bo go from the muted antique mall corridors to inside the vibrant pinball machine to meet Duke Kaboom.
Now, sets. Using art reference for guidance, technical artists build basic forms and shapes of the sets and characters in the computer during a process called modeling. See, it's all kind of standard in the pose. No, kidding. All right, shading comes next, during which technical artists use a combination of painting and programming to apply textures, colors, patterns, and other material, properties to give the sets complexity and appeal.
Layout in the sun. This image also shows the phase known as layout.
You can read it normally if you want, you know.
I don't know how. In which a virtual camera is placed into a shot. The characters are staged or roughly posed and animated into positions within the built set that work visually with the chosen camera angle. This staging helped to inform the director, editor, and animators of the composition, timing, and acting intention. Excuse me. He moved it on me.
Sorry.
Intention of the shot.
When layout is complete, the characters are brought to life by the animation department. Animators often use video reference of themselves or the voice actors to inform mouth shape or expressions, as well as overall movement of the characters. On average, it takes 4 to 6 weeks to animate a shot, but because the composition of the characters in the shot was so complex, it took the animation department 8 weeks to complete. Now, they're just talking about the one shot, like they're referring to recruiting Duke this whole time, by the way.
Ah, lighting. The lighting department helps to integrate all the elements, character sets, effects, etc. into a final fully visually realized image. The lighting process involves placing virtual light sources to the scene to illuminate the characters and the set. Technical artists place the lights to draw the audience's eye to story points and to create a specific mood. The lit images are then rendered at high resolution. 24 lit images, each around 2 million pixels, are created for each 1 second of the movie.
Now, they're also talking about how they use light to draw your eye to stuff. They use that same trick in video games when they're trying to get the player to go a certain way.
Oh.
They'll make sure that the lighting is set up just such a way so it draws your attention so you can go for in the next area of the level. It's very, very interesting. And it's stuff, when I get a little lost, I'll start to look at that. It's like, okay, well, the designers want me to find where to go next. Let me look to see where something stands out. Because I hadn't thought of that until, I think it's the first Left 4 Dead movie, or not movie, game. Left 4 Dead has a, like, the director's cut version of playing the game, and you can stop and press little things, and it'll pause things out, and you'll hear them talk about how they developed it. And they were talking about, like, you know, and especially when you have a dark room, the players need to get across it, and you give them guidance by having maybe a light over there, because you're naturally going to be drawn over to where the light is. And so here's this kind of fun in lighting, you know, talking about you want to draw the attention of the audience to certain things, you know, all of the characters. So I find that to be very, very interesting. Anyways, all the natural phenomena seen in the final image, such as the dust and atmosphere, were brought to life by the effects department. Effects artists create these elements using complex simulation software. I feel like the Jurassic Park DNA. Complex simulation software that models the physics of how certain materials move. These effects elements provide a believable and tangible sense of interaction between the characters and their rich, realistic world, which also helps to reinforce the emotional stakes for the audience. Now, we have another kind of interesting topic. Because one of the big deals with this was Bo got a complete rehaul. I mean, we got to see a whole different, but it's very interesting. I hadn't, until I had read this over from the press release, I didn't realize how much of Bo's classic design was still trying to be kept in this new look.
Yeah, so part of the dress and everything.
Yeah, but as they say it here, it says, artists explored several options for Bo Peep's new costume, but only ultimately decided to return to Bo's roots. We stuck with her original color scheme of baby blue, pink, and white to maintain the core of the character as we know her, said Mara McMahon, who's the character artist. But according to Hobson, the rest of Bo's look was turned upside down. We all knew that we wanted to give her the freedom of not having the dress without losing her beauty and femininity, says Hobson. So we embraced elements of her old costume that we really loved, like the bell-shaped dress, but decided that over the years she's figured out how to turn the skirt into a cape if she wants to be a superhero or a wizard for a kid. She can also change her toy pose and finagle her dress to be like a ballerina if she so chooses. Instead of a toy with a static costume, Bo is ever-changing. I think that is the hallmark of her adaptability, says McMahon. It represents everything she's learned over the years. She is still very much the original Bo Peep, with that sass and wit and inner strength, but she has also grown up quite a bit. And I appreciate that in the film, she did seem like Bo Peep that we knew, but just a little bit more, slightly different experiences from the rest of it.
A little tougher.
I was worried how they were going to change the character, that we were going to lose something of her. But no, she was great. It did fit right in. I kind of liked her this way. Because I was also concerned, you know, in the previous movies, she was never really involved in any of the adventures so much. She was always at home because she's a porcelain doll. And I don't want to spoil anything, but I do like that they acknowledge that, yeah, she's ceramic. She's made of porcelain. She's, you know, and she's been broken a few times. And even in some of the character design, they talked about, they were trying to put, you know, how, you know, you have something porcelain or ceramics, it gets those little tiny micro little cracks. You can kind of see the lines. They actually tried to put those into parts of her body, but not on her face. They didn't want her face to show any of it.
Yeah.
But they tried to put some of that aging into her, which I couldn't see. But I did notice her fabric looked a lot more like fabric in the opening of the movie when you get a look at her and wearing her old fabric. It looked more real. Their technology's getting amazing.
The advancements in the technology.
Yeah, oh, man. It is amazing.
It's funny. I love the original movie.
Yeah, I still do.
It was so great. But, of course, that's the first one. I mean,
right.
Not just in Toy Story, but really.
Yeah.
But when you watch it now, and this is not to put it down in any way, shape, or form, because, I mean, if it weren't for that, we wouldn't have anything.
Right.
But when you watch that film and you compare it to the third one or this one, you can see the definite differences in the animation greatness. But I watched that movie, and then I saw bits and pieces of the original one. You're like, oh, man, what great advances they have made. I mean, even between the first one and the second one, really.
Yeah.
I got to say, my favorite one is still the second one.
Yes. Well, because this one was not the best Toy Story movie, and neither was it the best Pixar movie, but it was darn good.
I got to say, my favorite, this is just for me personally, my favorite ones are two, probably 1, 4, 3. That's just me personally. My least favorite is 3. I like it. Just a little sad.
It's stressful.
A little sad.
But I can give that one some credit. I'll get to that later.
Oh, it's good. But this one to me makes up for any sadness in that one. I just like this one.
This one was funny.
And it was fun.
Well, you know, I just remember taking my daughter, you know, to see the third one. Because that one came out on her birthday. So I was pumped up. I was excited. I was like, oh, she's gonna love this. And so we're sitting there watching it, and she liked parts of it, but she also didn't like parts of it. You know, especially where it looked like Woody and Buzz were going to a certain fiery fate.
Yeah.
Well,
oh my goodness.
Well, there was a child next to us that was with his father.
Probably in tears, wasn't he?
Well, he was in tears, and he pretty much was like, "Dad, are Woody and Buzz going to you know where?"
Oh no!
And so people were laughing, but then the kid was confused because when it looks like they're just about to go down at the last minute, all of a sudden you see this bright light and a clock coming down. And I kid you not, the kid was Jesus. And so it was just a complete different experience, you know, from the other Toy Story
things. Yeah, it was.
And so, you know, after we got done watching it, you know, I was expecting Sarah, I like No, she didn't like it. She does now, but she didn't like it.
Yeah, that one was almost too mature for like the eyes where people are going to bring their young kids. But I think there was some symbolism of like a heaven and hell thing going on. I never thought of it, but when you look at it, it was like, if they're about to die and go to hell. And then the light from heaven opens up. That's it does create in your mind that thought, though. When you think about it.
I thought it seemed that way.
Yeah.
Because I'm also a pastor. You all know that. I'm a pastor. But I wasn't then. But that being said, it does kind of give you that symbol. I didn't yell that out in front of everyone like that poor little kid did.
Yeah.
That's
But that actually brings up one of the points I want to make. And this, I don't know if I'd call it a criticism or complaint or just I wish they would have done this. Toy Story 3 for its ending, and even for the duration of the movie, it's always been, the series, been an ensemble. It's always been about all these characters we've loved from the first one, and everybody had like good amount of screen time, and you loved every character, and we've gone with these same characters with a few added on every bit at a time, and even some new friends we got in the third movie, and it was enough to where it built that emotional bond when they thought they were all going to burn in the incinerator, and they lock hands together. It made us want to cry because it thought, oh, they're all going to die together. But then they get to stay together over, you know, joining with Bonnie. There was that togetherness that we had. This movie, if I had anything that I would complain about, a lot of our characters that we've loved from the first movie had one line. Yeah, they're there in the background, but they had one line.
The only thing I could say about that...
I got more today. I haven't finished, but they had one line. It's like every character we've loved through this entire thing was a cameo.
Yeah, you're right about
that. It was
that.
Like they had a cameo, and... when they build it up so much where the reason, that they make, you know, we've got a good idea for a story because we didn't need a Toy Story 4. We really didn't. It really wrapped it up in the third one. So when they say we've got a good story, and then part of the press are saying, when they were doing the voice, everybody just got so emotional. The ending is so emotional. I had that so many times. It's such an emotional ending. I knew what was going to happen. There's going to be a moving emotional ending. I pretty much knew what that ending was going to be before I walked into that theater. There was the only thing, because based upon what you see in trailers and stuff, I'm like, yeah, I kind of see where this is going. And they set it up for you even at the beginning. You're like, yeah, I know it's going to be emotional. The problem is, what's supposed to be emotional, I didn't get reattached to any characters. They relied too much on the previous films getting you to love these other characters to where this movie didn't build it up to where I felt the separation that I should have felt to where I would have been emotional about it. To me, the most emotional thing about it was, and I got to be careful about spoilers, but the whole Gabby storyline and how that worked out was more emotional to me than what should have been this separation that happens. Because even Buzz Lightyear was a side character. He's not even a supporting character on this one anymore. So I didn't have the emotional build because Buzz Lightyear's like, my favorite. You know,
he was in it quite a bit,
but he didn't have the same position in the film that he had before. He was a comic relief, and he almost barely has a because one of his big his personal storyline, and I like that a lot of characters had a personal storyline. His big thing was trying to figure out his inner voice, and it was funny, but it was made for comedy relief. And I don't know if it's supposed to be he found his inner voice when finally at the end he breaks the toy code and yells something when they can't see his mouth move. If that's supposed to have been the resolution for finding his inner voice, or what? But it is, I guess, something he made a decision to do on his own without consulting his button.
Yeah.
But I felt like he was kind of pushed aside to where I was like, well, goodbye there at the end. It didn't have the weight that it should have to me. Because I didn't get reinvested for this movie. Sometimes each movie, you need to get reinvested with your friends.
You can watch the other film.
Yeah, if I'd have watched all four in a row, it would have built it.
I did just happen to watch the third
one. But even the third one, you were invested enough in all the other side characters to where when you have that moment at the end where you think they're all going to die, but they join up, at least we're going to die together, you had that. And I didn't feel that comradeness.
Well, my daughter's main comment was after... Why wasn't Mr. Potato Head causing more problems?
Like, he wasn't. He had one line.
There's reason.
Mrs. Potato Head didn't have any lines.
There's a reason why Mr. Potato Head.
Don Rickles passed away. But he was alive when they were recording.
But I will say, I was actually glad for him that they allowed him to have that line. They didn't get anyone else. Because I was afraid that they were going to have, that they were not going to be able to have him in it.
Well,
I was thrilled.
Well, he was alive when they were recording. The recording session's done long before the animation.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So they had plenty of time for him to do it. They just didn't write for him anymore. Same as Timothy Dalton had one line. And the nice thing is their lines are usually a joke because this movie was one of the funniest ones they've ever put out.
Yeah, they did good.
Yeah.
But everybody else was pretty much, except for Woody and Bo Peep, Everybody else was comic relief. Even the two new characters, Bunny and Ducky, are pretty much just comedy relief. And they were funny.
Oh, they were great.
So nobody failed to be in comic relief. It was just kind of sad that that's about all they were.
Those two actors are great. They're perfect for comedy.
They were so funny.
They're hilarious. And they are all the time. Everything they do is great.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was very enjoyable, and it's just a mild thing that I really wish I could have had more time with some of the other characters, because if this was going to wrap up every Toy Story movie, I wanted to be able to say goodbye to all my Toy Story friends,
but
not just...
This is probably it, but they could always, if they wanted to.
The Further Adventures of Bo Peep and Woody?
or the others on their own. I mean, you honestly
but
could.
It wouldn't be the same without Woody. He's been our star character in every movie.
I'm simply saying you could always make side stories.
Yeah, side stories. Yeah.
It wouldn't have to be a movie, even. You could always do...
Give them any ideas.
They come up with something, they may do it.
I love little small stories about just those two new characters on the side, you know.
Bunny and Ducky.
Yeah, you know, stuck on you.
Yeah, that'd be funny. You could do things like they're like fugitives running away from the carnival or something.
That
would have been funny because they're chained together, you know.
Stuck on you. That'd be hilarious.
They could have done a lot of funny stuff with that, yes. But I do like the overall message, though, because I was worried at one point in the movie, I was worried that we're going to get away from Woody's message. Woody has always been about, I'm there for that kid.
Yeah.
And at one point, Bo Peep tells him off like it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
And it almost seemed like he was going to relate that to the antagonist. And I'm glad that got resolved later.
Yeah.
And Bo Peep realizes that she's...
Too.
Yeah, because after that, I was like, if you say Woody's been wrong about that the most important thing for him is that kid, and belonging to a kid is the most important thing for a toy, if you're going to suddenly say that's wrong, you'll destroy what you've done in the past three movies.
Yeah, I got worried too.
So that scared me, but then that was also just leading into... Because Woody is right. Woody is willing to sacrifice everything.
What's that show?
And then loyalty. That's, you know, what I
saw, love Kaboom.
I saw somebody even post to Facebook, tell me right now that Woody is not worthy of carrying Mjolnir. If Cap is, then Woody surely is. Heck yes. Woody is totally worthy of Mjolnir because how he's willing to sacrifice anything so a toy can be reunited with another kid. Let's face it. Woody's awesome.
I love it. But I love who he's named after.
Woody Harrelson?
No. Woodrow. They named after Woodrow.
See, I always figured since he was called Woody, it was because I thought he was like a wooden doll, like a wooden head.
Yeah.
And they kind of destroyed that for him by stepping on it and he's plastic.
Oh.
And also, I thought that his star was supposed to be stitched on and it's so easily removed.
Yeah.
Sorry, spoiler warning. That kind of, you know, it's like they redesigned Woody a little bit because they wanted to make some changes for some good story stuff, but they kept true to Woody's character, and Woody is usually right with the importance of how great it is to be a toy, being loved by a kid, and I love his new mission in life at the end of the movie, which I'm not going to say. It fits so well, for Woody is still Woody, even though he doesn't have a kid. I can't say, because I'll spoil it.
Yeah.
I loved the way they do that, because Woody's just a great character.
You know the one thing I always wondered? Okay, so he's old.
Who knows 50, how old he's
right?
been? Yeah,
Woody is supposed to kind of be like Howdy Doody.
Yeah.
So I always wondered, unless he was just in the store for a long, long time, surely he had to have a kid.
Yeah, he probably was a hand-me-down.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if he was his dad's or his granddad's?
That's what I'm thinking. They never got into it, but...
That would be interesting if he was his granddad's or his dad. That would be a fun story.
Something passed
they
down.
They could do a prequel. That would be fun.
Yeah, would be nice to see some stuff. Yeah, some prequels. Like, where did he come from? Because he's an older toy, but, well, you know, yeah, he's still beloved by an 80s, 90s kid.
Yeah, that would be fun.
I guess he's more of a 90s kid, though, Andy.
Yeah, 90s.
He's like 5 years old in 1995 when the first film comes out.
Yeah.
Which
I've
never seen that one twice in the theater.
Yeah, I saw a few times. I love that movie. Mm-hmm. But I would love to see like where he came from, because he was probably in the 1950s, so it'd be like, his grandfather probably.
Well, you know, it makes you wonder, though, if maybe he was kept as a collectible in a box.
Yeah.
And because, now granted, Stinky Pete had become aware and alive while still in his box, maybe because it had been just so long. But notice all the Buzz Lightyear figures, until they're disturbed in their box, didn't come to life. So what if Woody, because he didn't know he was part of a show.
Yeah.
What if maybe he had just been in a box all that time for some reason until given to Andy? And Andy's like, collector schmicker, I'm 5 years old. It's a toy. Yay.
Yeah.
They don't do that. Like,
so
that's when Woody would have actually come to life, maybe when he's actually taken out of the box and played with.
It would be neat to see that, what they could do, though, for that. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Well, Disney Plus is going to have some kind of content.
So. They could.
They got lots of stuff for content, but a Toy Story series, why not?
That would be fun.
Fun in Bonnie's room.
you know, origin of Woody.
The Woody Show, yeah. Or what, you know, this is rumor. I don't usually report rumors, but there was something that flew around that crossed my eyes that the Country Bear Jamboree, I guess it still exists in Walt Disney World, they were thinking about taking that out and putting a Woody's Roundup and having animatronics that look like they're marionettes.
That'd be fun.
That would be fun, but let's not take away Walt's last laugh.
No.
The last thing Walt was noted to laugh at was some drawings of the Country Bears, and destroying the Country Bears would just... Don't do it. I'm already sad that they messed with the Pirates of the Caribbean. They took, golly, now I can't think of his name either. His voice is now gone because he's not the auctioneer anymore.
Sorvino. No,
I was looking at you like you were going to fill it in for me.
Know this stuff.
Paul Reubens.
I'm not on my game today. But, you know, we've lost his voice from Pirates of the Caribbean forever because of changes. And, you know... Yes, always adding new stuff is usually a great thing, but sometimes we lose something and that hurts.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'd hate for them to lose Walt's last laugh by cutting the Country Bear Jamboree out. But we'll see, because right now it's just the idea floated around there and it was a rumor, so I don't think it's actually happening. But it would be neat, but I just don't want to see them cut out the Country Bear Jamboree to do it.
Yeah.
Although Frontierland, it would be a great place to do a Woody's Roundup thing. It would be awesome. But
I hear everything.
You're building a Pixar area, though, over in the park. Put it on Pixar Pier.
Put it there, yeah.
Put it there. But, of course, Pixar Pier is over in Disneyland, and we're talking Florida. But that's the only place that has Country Bear Jamboree. So, in order to put it somewhere, they might...
Well, they have it.
But they have Toy Story Land now.
Yeah, over there in MGM. Or so, I say MGM, you know what I mean.
Yeah, the Hollywood Studios. So, put it over there in Toy Story Land, and put a Woody's Roundup there if you're going to build it, and make it awesome, because it would be. But please don't cut out something that was Walt's last laugh. Last laugh.
Yeah, last.
So, okay. Anyways, do we have anything else we want to say about Toy Story 4?
It's wonderful.
It was great. It was a lot of fun. Go again. See it twice. See it three times, and it'll be funny, I'm sure, every time.
Four
you see
times.
It.
It's Toy Story 4.
Yeah.
Well, I just think it was super funny. It gives a more satisfactory end.
Yeah, it does.
From my point
yeah, of view. I just wish it would have had a bit more build up to where I would have felt the same way I did at the end of Toy Story 3 when it happened. But I guess maybe it's too much. I was expecting it because they said it was going to be an emotional ending.
Well, I'll tell you what.
And so I was like, oh, this is the emotional ending. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, but to me, I wasn't sad. I was like, good for Woody. You know, Woody has sacrificed so much. Woody's finally getting something he wants. I was actually just too happy for Woody to be, oh, this is sad. Oh. And well, so if that's what they wanted me to feel, I didn't feel it. I felt just happy for Woody.
Well, I don't think they really wanted you to feel sad.
That might have been it, because it was so sad happy, in Toy Story 3. But
happy is also an emotion.
It's still an emotion, yes. But when they're saying Tim Allen cried when reading the lines, that's what sold it for me.
For him.
But that's what sold it for me. It's like, ooh, this is going to be some big impactful thing. Well, and I guess I went in too much expecting it that I was like, oh, yeah, well, here it is.
For him it was, you know, because if you've been acting...
Because if they follow Woody, he's out of a job.
Well, you know, if you've been doing that stuff for years, you know, and you're sitting there reading it, and you know, it's going to be the last... It would be a movie.
Because to see Buzz Lightyear die... No, I'm joking. I'm joking.
He really did get burned up.
Yeah.
And lots of us there was the pitchfork.
But especially though, speaking of the ending, stay until the very end of the Pixar logo at the end of the movie. Do not leave. There is stuff all through. There's a bit of the credits, but even the Pixar logo at the end of the movie, you have to see. So do not get out of your seat. Sit there, watch. There's a lot of extra innings, more than extra innings than Lord of the Rings. That's what it was. Lots of extra little endings and little bits of story, little extra gags, and then finally at the end, the most satisfying, funny bit is at the Pixar logo at the end. So do not leave.
Well, it's worth it if you get Phil's commentary.
Well, wait, the Lord of the Rings. Alrighty. Well, but now it's time for Gary Wood, which I guess I gave enough of an introduction earlier, but had a fun conversation. Here is part one of my conversation with Gary Wood, filmmaker of Saving Star Wars and some upcoming documentaries.
To Disney and beyond.
Did you get a chance to see the movie?
Yes. While I was kind of, I have irritable bowel syndrome, and it's been working its way and doing bad stuff to my stomach.
I actually do too.
So, yeah, I was having a bad stomach day the other day. And so I figured, well, okay, if I'm going to lay in bed not feeling good, since I found it on YouTube, I said, let me watch this. And it was good because I needed to laugh. So
good. Very good. Glad you laughed.
It did make me feel better. Yeah. It's like this is the screwiest thing. So,
Yeah, it's a silly, goofy movie, but it's got some heart, you know, and it's funny. It's, you know, it's so low budget. The acting is weak. Most parts. It's kind of like, to me, I always look at, as a matter of fact, when we were on the set, my partner, Justin Eskew, we're filming and we're watching these performances, and he pulls me aside and he goes, "These performances suck." I go, "Yeah, but I think it's okay." He's like, "How was it okay?" And I said, "Look at Clerks. The performances were horrible in Clerks."
Yeah.
You know, but that kind of added to the charm of it. It added to the kind of quirkiness of it. And Justin goes, "But they didn't mean to do that." And I go, what he said was, he said, "Yeah, but I think they were trying to do that." That's what he, and I'm like, "I don't think they were. I think that's the best they could do."
Yeah.
You know? And I said, "So I think, to me, this is working. You know, it's not, I knew I had to have two stronger actors in the leads, you know, with Woody and Hank." And Hank ended up, Jim Peterson ended up winning Best Supporting Actor at the London Science Fiction Film Festival.
Wow.
I know, man. We were up against multi-million-dollar films starring Sean Astin, and you probably heard of Primer, and one of the Cube movies, you know. And so we come out of it with a Best Screenplay nomination and a win for Best Supporting Actor. So that's huge, you know. Very cool. And Joe Urban, who played Woody, he had the toughest role because, you know, he's a grieving father through the whole thing. And, you know, and it was tough to, we couldn't just watch this guy mope around the whole movie, you know? And so my trick to him was, I said, the way I see it is, when you're with your son, there's nothing wrong. You're the life of the party. You're just trying to keep him laughing and having fun, you know, and keep his mind off of that. And nothing's wrong. And when you're with other people, you're just pissed at the world. You're just angry and bitter, and you despise anybody who wants to have a good time, and you know that you've got so much going on. And the only time we will ever see him sad is when he's by himself. We'll see him sad and crying, you know.
Yeah.
And that kind of, to me, that gave him some layers, little dimensions to him that wasn't just "woe is me, you know, my life sucks and moping around, you know." So I think that worked out well, and that was a tough job for Joe, you know. And obviously, he's not a professional film actor, but I think he did pretty good, you know.
Yeah.
The quirkiness comes from all the secondary characters. Which, funny story, the guy who plays Dennis Vader, the Darth Vader costumer.
Yeah. Which his face somehow looked familiar. Like, maybe I've seen him in another fan film or somewhere. I don't know.
I doubt it, but maybe.
Maybe he's just one of those type of people that you've always run into, that person. He just has that.
I hope so. Yeah. Well, here's the funny part. He never acted in his life. He got cast because he had a badass Darth Vader suit.
Yeah, it was a good suit.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. It was like, and you know, he's a big guy. He's tall. So not just anybody's going to fit in that. And I'm not going to say, "Hey, can we borrow your, you know, $10,000 Darth Vader suit?" Like, no, it's like, "Dude, you got the suit. You're in." But here's the thing about him, man. You know, it's like, again, not a solid actor, you know, weak and a little stifled. But it worked. I think it worked, you know. And of all the people on that set, man, I think he had the most fun. He appreciated being there the most. And he gave it all. He gave it his all. I mean, he really, really went for it. And for somebody, because even like, you can tell he's a little stiff, but you can tell he's not holding back either. You know, he's doing the best that he can do.
Yeah.
At that point in time. And
how many people get to say they have a scene with David Prowse?
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, you know, we shot a whole summer, weekends only, right? We had a few weekends off here and there, but we shot a whole summer. And the biggest problem with movie making, especially when you're not doing it all at once, Monday through Saturday or whatever, is keeping the momentum going and keeping everybody interested. So,
yeah.
Towards the end of the summer, and especially we had a couple scenes that we needed to finish up, which we didn't get to in till February. We shut down around Labor Day, and you know, we finished up then in the following February. And we were having trouble getting the participation from the 501st. And don't get me wrong, they're amazing. You see them in the movie, and what mm-hmm. they did was amazing, you know, and we couldn't have done it without them. The same with the Indy Knights, which is the Jedi, you know, group in Indianapolis.
Cool. So,
but as participation started lagging, because it was kind of dragging on too long, you know, I've been all summer. Scott Bader, he drunk emailed his fellow 501st guys and just ripped them up. Like, you know, he goes, you know, we spend all this money in these costumes and we do this. He goes, what do we do it for? This is exactly what we do it for. And he's like, and here's our opportunity and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it was just hilarious. And he called me drunk saying he wrote it, you know, wrote it. And it was, you know, I got drunk dialed from Dennis Bader. You know. He smells like spit over the phone too. Scott's the complete opposite of Bader. He's pretty badass. He's, you know, and he's like a big wig, big executive with Rolls Royce. So
dang,
he's not. Yes. It was a big deal for him. He didn't have to do that. You know, he didn't get paid, you know, no, but the only person that got paid on that set was Dave Prowse. The funny story about how I got Dave Prowse involved was we were about halfway through shooting and we go to Gen Con is in Indianapolis and Gen Con doubled for the Star Wars celebration. So we're actually shooting it. Somebody says, hey, Darth Vader's there signing autographs. Well, he had been there the year before at the Star Wars celebration. We had Star Wars celebration, I think 2, 3, and 4, I think, in Indianapolis. And he had been there before, but we weren't shooting. I had actually didn't even have a script at that point, but I knew what I was going to do. But he's there and I couldn't get near him. I mean, his lines were the longest of all of them. And, you know, Billy Dee Williams was getting pissed off because his line kept invading his and, you know, and they had to move Billy Dee and, you know, other people had to move because, you know, so like I didn't have a chance. So then I hear he's here and I'm like, no, he's not here because it wasn't advertised. He wasn't advertised to be there. I go and I walk over to the signing area. I'm like, there's Dave Prowse. Okay, we're going to take a break because I got to run home and get my 1977 Star Wars Darth Vader mug and get that baby signed.
Yeah.
So I get it signed and talking to him and I said, hey, we're actually here making a movie today. Really? What's it about? And I tell him, and you know, it's about two Star Wars fans that accidentally kidnapped George Lucas, and he laughs. And then I go, so would there be any like legal reasons why you couldn't appear in something like that? He's like, no, not at all. He goes, I'm like, well, I wouldn't ask you to wear the suit, and he goes, no, I wouldn't wear the suit. And I said, well, legally, can you? He says, yeah, I can. He goes, but I wouldn't. I said, well, okay, well, let me know how to get to the script. So he gave me his email address. We went back to shooting, and then we shot on weekend. So Monday, I sent him the email, sent him the script, and he wrote me back pretty quickly, probably in a day or two. And you know how the movie starts out where Woody's pissed, you know, and he talks about the rabid Star Wars fans and the geeks and the jerks and the, you know, morons and all that stuff. And, mm-hmm. And you know, so he read the first act and he wrote back and said, hey, you're kind of hard on the Star Wars fans here. He goes, I don't know, you know, if this is going to be, you know, something I should get involved in. And so I wrote him back and said, trust me, please read on, finish the script. You'll see that it all comes together in the end. And that the very geeks and dorks that he, you know, not only do they come to his aid, but he has to finally admit that he is one of them.
Yeah.
And that kind of comes from me too. I'm the same way. It's like, I love Star Wars. I don't dress up. I don't, you know, but I'm kind of a closet Star Wars fan sometimes. You know, I don't want to be labeled a nerd, even though I clearly am. You know, but as I've gotten older, I've cared less. less and less about that. But certainly back when I made this, you know, 15 years ago, I was a little that way. So I came to terms with my fandom as well. So Dave, about a week later, I got an email and Dave said, "You're right. All is well. I'm in." I'm like, "Nope, get out. I got Darth Vader in my freaking low budget movie." So then came the, the other thing though, the only stipulation that he had was that he wanted his part to be more than a walk-on or cameo. He wanted to have a significant role in the plot. So keep in mind, we'd already been shooting for a month or for half the summer, 2 months or more.
Yeah.
So I had to look at the script, see what we'd shot. I had to figure out a way to weave him into the story and make him significant without changing what we'd already shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I came up with was, well, okay, he's going to be at the convention trying to get himself into the prequels. And in the end, you know, he saves the day.
Yeah.
So, you know, it worked perfectly. You can't even tell. You know, I think it's pretty seamless because it just seems like that's the way we wrote it from the beginning, you know?
Yeah, it did work out very much like it was planned that way.
Yeah, so I'm very happy with that. I was, my favorite part, of course, was that I got throttled and choked by Darth Vader and thrown against the wall.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. I love when he picks up your other antagonist, you know, the Italian guy. I love it when he picks him up. And I was like, oh, just drop one line from the film would have been great too.
Yeah, well, see, that was me.
Oh, that was you getting to fill in.
That was me. Yeah, and the thing is, I didn't want to be in this thing. My friends and my partners, they all wanted me to play the lead, and I'm like, okay, nobody wants this short, fat, bald dude. You know. It's not going to work. I wasn't planning on playing that guy, Max Salvatore. But here's another thing that people don't quite get, which this is going to be our special edition shot in the new version. We're going to do a CGI shot. But the guy that walks into frame and is watching the trailer with Lucas, and he talks about, you know, hey, we're going to go in Indianapolis, zip in, zip out, you know. That's mm-hmm. That's supposed to be the same guy that I played. But we shot that scene, and then that guy lost his job and took another job out of state, so he was gone. Then I hired another guy to do it. And then the day that we were shooting in the alleyway where they arrest, it all kind of comes together, and they arrest Mac, and they fire the agent guy, and everybody's there. The entire cast is there. The day that we were going to shoot that, the guy who I hired to play Mac called and said, "I'm sick. I can't get away from the toilet."
Oh, wow.
At that point, I'm like, I hollered for my wife and said, "Hey, you know what? Get me a jacket and a black sweater, and I guess I'm going to be this guy." Because I couldn't coordinate that day again, you know, with the location and everything. So I ended up doing it. But like I said, I think one of the fun things we're going to do with this new version that we're working on, or a special edition, it's going to be Saving Star Wars, a very special edition. and it's, I think we're going to try to CGI me into that scene. So there'll be a little bit of connective tissue there, and you'll know.
Yeah.
The way it is, it kind of pops up. People don't really question it. I don't think they put two and two together, and they don't go, oh, wait, that's a different guy, you know, because we never mention his name, and it just seems like it's, you know, it doesn't really get questioned. But if we can get it to where it was supposed to be, to where it's the same guy, then, like I said, I hope there's a little bit of dramatic flow through there and, you know, connective tissue, so to speak.
Yeah, and it's what I've found very fun is part of the plot involving Woody, which is funny, you know, with Toy Story 4 having just come out, but trying to get those, you know, they want the 7, 8, and 9 films, and now here we are getting them on the verge of 9 coming out this year. I was like, oh man, they had no idea what was going to happen.
I'm gonna blow your mind a little bit here, okay? So here's the thing, and you know, I'm not totally like saying yes, we saved Star Wars. However, our movie was about saving Star Wars, right? It was about trying to get those sequels made.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if George Lucas has seen our movie, but I do know he's had the opportunity. And I know this because I personally handed two copies of the movie to Steve Sansweet, who was the fan relations guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was well aware of the movie. He was like, you know, hey, I'm actually eager to see what Dave Prowse does. And I heard you guys were just in London, right? You just won some awards. Yeah, I did. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. We did. So then I was in Dallas at a showing at a convention, and Matthew Wood was there. Matthew Wood is the supervising, you know, editor, a sound editor at Skywalker Ranch. He works, he's told me he sees Lucas every day, works with him. I gave him two copies. And he goes, oh, this is awesome. I'm going to pass this around at work. And I'm like, work is Skywalker Ranch. So, hell yeah, pass them around here.
Have some fun.
Right? So there's four copies roaming around Lucas's camp. So then, just by sheer happenstance, we're at the London Science Fiction Film Festival, and I'm doing a lot of sightseeing before, you know, our showing. I didn't see any other movies. I just wanted to see London, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we go to Abbey Road. Actually, we didn't go to Abbey Road. We did go to Abbey Road. And coming back on the train, on the tube, there was a guy that had a big cello case. And, you know, clearly that's probably the only place he was coming from. And I said, were you playing Abbey Road? And he goes, yeah. And I go, oh, cool. Says, what are you guys working on? And he was kind of reluctant. And I go, hey, you know, it's okay. You know, you don't have to tell me. It's top secret or whatever. And he goes, well, actually, I love to tell people. But he goes, we're scoring the episode 3. Revenge of the Sith. I'm like, you are got to be. There is no way that I came half a planet away and ran into some dude playing on the score. So I'm like, you know, okay, is George Lucas there? And he goes, well, we're not supposed to say. And I go, so was that a yes? And he goes, yeah. I'm like, oh, hell yes. So the next day, I grabbed two copies, put it in a manila envelope, and something told me, do not seal that envelope.
Yeah.
I wrote Mr. George Lucas on the outside of the envelope, didn't seal it. I go, I had a maybe a year old baby with us at the time, like my son Max, and he's in the stroller. We go to Abbey Road Studios, we take the tube, we go to Abbey Studio, and there's steps there. So I have to lift the baby carriage up the steps, roll it in. Maybe that helped. We got a baby, right? So
yeah.
Maybe we're embarrassed, right?
Yeah.
So I go, they go, hey, can I help you? And I'm in Abbey Road Studios now. Right? And they go, can I help you? And I go, I'm actually here to deliver a package for George Lucas. Three ladies behind the desk immediately get very nervous, stiff, and quiet. And they look at each other. And one of them finally speaks up and says, is he expecting it? And it's kind of like that scene in Ghostbusters. You know, if somebody asks you if you are God, you say yes. So he said, is he expecting you? I said, yes, he is. So they're still nervous. So they, I opened the envelope and showed them. I said, it's just a couple DVDs. Then they relaxed. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So I sealed it. I had, you know, George Lucas on the outside, and they took it. And I said, thank you very much. And I left Abbey Road Studios, and then we went outside and took pictures at the crosswalk and outside and everything.
So, of course.
I don't know if it got delivered to him, but that's basically six copies that are floating around his camp that he had the opportunity to see. I don't know if he saw it. Garrick Hagen saw the movie. Kenny Baker saw the movie. Anthony Daniels stopped in for about 5 minutes in a showing, but the theater was very hot, and I think he left mainly because of that, I hope. So, again, there's people that have seen it that could mention to him and say, hey, you should check this out or avoid this at all costs. So the question then becomes, if he saw it, you know, was there a sliver of what we did, that what we said in there that could have possibly said to him, this is bigger than me, and even though I have no interest in doing it, maybe I should turn these reins over to somebody and let this be done.
Yeah, and I've heard I've heard quotes about him saying that he felt like he made a film that if he hadn't done it, Disney would have. So it's yeah. Like, yep, yeah, hey, well, let's have Disney make some then.
Exactly. So I can't say no. You know, I can't say no.
You're
we
right.
Absolutely had no. We had no part in this. Were we a major factor in the decision? I'm sure we were not.
Yeah.
You know.
It's but that same people who hold the holiday special as canon. It's like you can't really completely say it is, but you're going to say it is because you got enough stuff to be able to say, why not?
Right, exactly. So, you know, so that's our kind of like little ace in the hole there of you know, what we're also going to play on in this future, you know, round is just, you know, hey, you can't say we didn't have an effect.
Yeah, know? That's true.
So, maybe we did actually save Star Wars, you know?
Maybe.
So, so that's pretty huge. The biggest hurdle to overcome when people see it is, at first, I really resented and pushed back against the term fan film, you know, because it doesn't take place in the Star Wars universe. Yeah. You know, it takes place in
the real world.
Yeah, which, the real world and conventions.
In a way, that is a fan film. You made a film about the fans. And in that way, yeah, it is a fan
sure.
film.
That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, but in a way, you know, most films are fan films. You know yeah. what I mean? Star Wars was a fan film, in a way. You know? So Raiders of the Lost Ark was a fan film.
Yeah,
so,
because George was a fan of Flash Gordon.
That's when I started saying, well, okay, if it's a fan film, that's fine. But it is a fan film that stands on its own. It's mm-hmm. it's real. The movie's really not about Star Wars, you know. So, and it was more, you know, what the story was about a father and son. You know, it wasn't about Star Wars. Star Wars was just the backdrop. Star Wars gave them something to bond. And much like my kids, and my I have an older son that we bonded just like he talks in the movie. You know, it's like we. Saw the new releases when they came out, you know, and the re-released in the theater and the special editions. And then in 1999, you know, 1998, they start making the Phantom Menace. And it's like we're passing around stories. And this was kind of pre-internet. I mean, not pre-internet, but certainly pre in every household, you know.
Yeah, plus it was pre-social media at that time, too.
Yeah, you know? Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You had chat rooms, but that was about it, you know. And we're going to have to leave that right there. We'll pick it up again next week. But I hope you enjoyed that. I enjoyed talking to him, or basically listening to him. He pretty much was just telling me a lot of interesting stories. And, of course, like I was saying before, go see Toy Story 4. It was delightful. And I got to say, I am a Forky fan. I loved Forky. I just wish he'd have been in the movie even more than he was, because it seemed like his plot line kind of was resolved. And it became just a MacGuffin for the rest of the movie, and I thought we were going to get more of Forky than we did, and I really did love Forky. So definitely go see Toy Story 4 and come back next week when we're going to hear more about Saving Star Wars and some of the other projects that Gary Wood's looking for, you know, or doing right now. And also look up Saving Star Wars on YouTube. Try Googling it first and see if you can find the film that way, because Saving Star Wars on YouTube, you get a lot of different videos of other people that think Star Wars needs to be saved from other stuff or whatever. But if you look up Saving Star Wars on Google, you'll hopefully find his official YouTube channel where the entire film is there, so you can watch it and have a good laugh. It is a very funny film. But we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast.
We invite you back next week for more fun and adventure.
Until then, remember to keep a pixie in your pocket.
It's that young at heart, positive attitude that you can share with others.
And remember to visit our website at neverlandpodcast.com.
There you can find links to our news page, our shop,
our contact page, where you can easily send an email to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com.
You can also find our Neverlanders page, where you can find out how to become an official Lost Boy or Pixie, because girls are too clever to get lost.
Become a real Neverlander.
Please feel free to leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NeverlandPCast.
And like our Neverland Podcast fan page on Facebook.
We also have a group on Facebook for you to join.
We also appreciate your support to keep the Neverland Podcast up and running.
Visit patreon.com/NeverlandPodcast to donate to keeping the pixie dust alive.
Copyright content featured on the Neverland Podcast is copyright of their respective creators and used under fair use license.
All original content is copyright of Blue Band Productions, and a very special thanks to Yeehaw Bob Jackson at yeehawbob.com for our new ending music.
God bless!
Yeah! Hello, everybody, this is Yeehaw Bob Jackson. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, it's true. Neverland Podcast, we love you.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.